Tom O'Brien never wavered on his move to make Mike Glennon his starting quarterback, with or without Russell Wilson.
I never had to feel vindicated by any of that. That would never be my goal once I made a decision. I don't care what people think.
With no guarantee of Wilson's return this season, O'Brien made a firm commitment to make Glennon his starting quarterback. The move all but assured one of state's most productive and popular players ever would not be coming back. And when Wilson began the season on fire in Wisconsin, the heat started turning up. But considering Glennon led the Pack to wins in six of their last eight games, including a Belk Bowl win over Louisville, and he has another season of eligibility left, it's hard to argue with O'Brien's decision now.
You know, I made a decision that was best for this football team going forward. And when I made the decision, you know, weighing all options and looking at the talent that this kid has, I knew that we would have a quarterback at school. I wouldn't have been sure if I went the other way if Russell Wilson would have ever come back to school.
I really try not to worry about it too much the whole time. I knew he was a great player and he would do great at wherever he ended up, but I also felt confident in myself, and I think my teammates felt very confident in me. So I knew with how the coaches prepared me that I would do just fine this year.
When I made the decision, I think I made the right choice, and I don't have to feel vindicated by anybody. But he helped me.
Ken Medlin, WRL Sports, Charlotte.
I'm glad you're doing this podcast because I always thought, like, I don't know if it's quite worthy of a 30 for 30, but it's worthy of miniseries or segment. I mean, there's a lot to it.
99.9 The Fan's Joe Giglio and Joe Ovius set the record straight and never failed. The Russell Wilson Story Podcast.
Brought to you by Copiers Plus. If you don't know how much printing expenses are costing your business, you're probably spending too much. Gain clarity with a free assessment from Copiers Plus. Book yours today at copiers-plus.com.
Can you be right and wrong at the same time? Given the success Russell Wilson had at Wisconsin and then with the Seattle Seahawks, most people would say that Tom O'Brien was wrong to not only let one of the biggest stars in the NFL leave NC State, but to ask him to do so. But if you think about it, time has proven Tom O'Brien to be right. The one thing that Tom O'Brien, the Marine, always wanted Russell Wilson to do more than anything else was commit. Make a commitment to the team. Make a commitment to football. What happened once Wilson finally gave up his baseball dreams? His football career took off on a rocket. Russell Wilson left NC State, and he never played baseball again. At least, not any competitive, meaningful baseball.
Well, once I ended up getting my release, I knew I wanted to focus on football for the most part. And then after I figured out I was going to University of Wisconsin, once I landed my feet in Madison, I knew this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. You know, I experimented with the baseball thing. I had a great experience with it, but I knew that's not what I wanted to do. I knew that playing football, playing the quarterback position, there's nothing better than preparing for a football game, playing in front of 100,000 people and throwing a winning touchdown and taking the team down up and down the field with 2 minutes to go. And that's what I wanted to be a part of, and I'm excited about my future in the National Football League. You know, my goal is to play 12 to 15 years and hopefully, you know, be a Super Bowl winning quarterback a couple times. And that's the exciting part. It, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, obviously, but you just take one day at a time and just try to have a championship day every day.
Those 2-0 sliders can be a tough deal, huh?
Yeah, I couldn't hit the slider good enough, so I had to move on and focus on throwing the Duke around.
But here's the catch. That was never going to happen for Wilson at NC State. He couldn't give up baseball without knowing he had a potential career in the NFL. He didn't have a career in the NFL until he went to Wisconsin. Because remember, O'Brien tried to get him invited to the combine after the 2010 season, and the NFL didn't want Wilson.
Do you think Russell can be an NFL quarterback?
I don't think the NFL thinks so, and that's the only important thing. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what you or I think. I mean, it's what the NFL thinks. And I think that there was no real commitment one way or another from the NFL towards him of being a quarterback. You know, and that I think all factored into the decision-making process too.
At Wisconsin, Wilson showed how quickly he could adapt to a new system and a new locker room. He was on campus for only a few weeks before his new teammates voted him a team captain.
You know, knowing the offense in and out and You know, I'm really learning well. I'm a quick learner, I guess you could say. I mean, I graduated in 3 years for a reason, so it's been fun. It's been challenging. It's everything I expected it to be. Nothing should ever be promised. I'm a competitor. I want to be the best every single day. And
since I've been a head coach, I've never had so many people, you know, just me filling up my car with gas at a gas station, somebody coming up and asking me questions about him. And he doesn't take anything for granted. He doesn't want anything given to him.
And at Wisconsin, Wilson showed at his height he could play behind a massive offensive line in a traditional pro-style offense. Do you know who loves all of those things? The NFL. In Wilson's lone season in Madison, Wisconsin went 11-2 and won the Big Ten title. In 3 years with Wilson as the starter, NC State had records of 6-7, 5-7, and 9-4. Wilson played in the Pizza Bowl and a bowl game named for a sneaker chain. That's a long ways away from the freaking Rose Bowl, my friends. And that's where Wilson's college career ended, on January 2nd, 2012. Pasadena, California, the granddaddy of them all. Without the exposure of that bigger national stage, and without how adroitly he handled the transition to Wisconsin, you could argue Wilson wouldn't be where he is right now. But his ascension in football truly only started when he did the one thing that Tom O'Brien wanted him to do all along. So in the end, Tom O'Brien was actually right. And here's the part of the story where we reach the breakup. NC State wrapped up its spring game on April 16th with Mike Glennon at quarterback and Russell Wilson playing minor league baseball with the Asheville Tourists. On April 30th, a Friday, NC State had announced that Wilson had been given his release to finish his football career at a different school. In between, Tom O'Brien and Russell Wilson had a phone call that Peter King, then of Sports Illustrated, made famous in 2013.
Did everybody look at Tom O'Brien like, are you out of your mind?
There was a group of people that were like that anyway.
Yeah.
And it's natural.
It is natural. But I understood. In fact, I asked Russell Wilson this exact question a couple of times in the last year, including once in March when I saw him in Seattle. And he insisted he was definitely coming back. You know, but then again, he was hitting 225 at the time. And he was in a Holiday Inn in Rome, Georgia. And, you know, I mean, he's thinking to himself, what am I going to do? What am I doing here, you know? Exactly. And I think, look, it turned out to be good for everybody, I guess good for everybody except Tom O'Brien, who got whacked. But I understand why the decisions were made that were made.
What was said? Only Tom O'Brien and Russell Wilson really know. We know Russell's embellished version from the Wisconsin graduation speech.
The summer before my senior year of college, I'm playing minor league baseball. I call my football coach at NC State and say, hey, coach, I'd like to come back for my senior year. And he told me I wasn't coming back. He said, listen, son, you're never going to play in the National Football League. You're too small. There's no chance. You got no shot. Give it up. Of course, I'm on this side of the phone saying, so you're telling me I'm not going to come back to NC State? I won't see the field? He said, no, son, you won't see the field.
What did O'Brien really say? I asked him about that earlier this month. O'Brien, retired now and living in Charleston, I talked to him a couple of times during this podcast. Each time he refused to be interviewed for the podcast. But I had to know, what did you say to Russell Wilson? This is what Tom O'Brien told me earlier this month. Quote, whatever Russell heard is what he believes. So it doesn't matter what I actually said, end quote. If you know anything about Tom O'Brien, that answer can hardly surprise you. Kyle Wilson, Russ's friend and former teammate on the Wolfpack baseball team, was with Russell Wilson in Asheville not long after that now famous phone call.
Yeah, so it's funny. I was actually with Russ when he made the announcement to go to Wisconsin. And I was with him in Asheville. I was visiting, watching him play for a weekend series. And I'll never forget, man, I got down there and he's like, Kyle, think about playing football again. And I'm like, hell yeah, dude, you come back to state? And he goes, well, I called Tom O'Brien and he said basically it's time for me to move on.
When Wilson got back to Raleigh, he tried to make one last appeal to athletic director Debbie Yao to intervene with O'Brien on his behalf. But that didn't work out either. Maybe the one person who could have helped Wilson was NC State baseball coach Elliot Avent. But Wilson didn't go to Avent for help this time. Avent didn't know what was going on with his favorite quarterback.
He did not want to leave here. I'm going to tell you that. You talk about, did I have conversation with Russell? Not in the beginning, or I would have done everything I could to make sure this didn't happen, okay?
So he never called you and said, hey, will you talk to Tom?
No,
will you?
No, he did not. He handled it
will
himself.
Will you help me out?
I would have done anything I could have to, if I'd have known about it, to try to keep that. Because he deserved to finish his career at NC State. And that was, to me, was, you know, I'm not saying anybody was wrong. I'm not making any accusations. I'm just saying, yes, we should have found a way to keep him here. And he, I know for a fact, because after I found out that, you know, then I, obviously I had some conversations. He wanted to finish his career at NC State. He did not want to leave. He felt like he had to leave.
When you saw the success that he had at Wisconsin, instantly, did you think, wow, he should still be here? Or did you think, you know what, that's going to launch him to even bigger heights?
How could he be this good in a different team coming there new? I don't care who you are, right away. And then I sat down and I thought, why are you shocked at all at anything he does? You know what I'm saying? Quit being shocked. And then I remember being very elated for him, very happy for him. I'm like, wow, you found a way to make that work too.
Once Wilson hit the graduate transfer market, which was in its infant stages back then, it's nothing like it is now, he was truly a hot commodity. Cam Newton, who had just led Auburn to the national championship in 2010, he called Wilson and tried to get him to replace him as the Tigers' quarterback. Wisconsin had won 11 games and a share of the Big Ten title in 2010. They had star running backs Melvin Gordon, James White, and Monty Ball back behind an NFL offensive line. They were interested in Wilson becoming their quarterback. Before Wilson made his decision, he made a visit to an old NC State coach, Mark Trestman, the assistant who believed in Wilson's football potential before anyone else.
You know, going to Wisconsin is something he didn't want to do. You know, he wanted to play at NC State, but they drew the line in the sand, and I'm not really coming on that one way or the other, but he made a very good decision. I think he would have been successful at Auburn or Wisconsin. But, you know, when he went to Wisconsin, he knew he was going to play behind a great offensive line and they would be able to run the football and move the ball in the air with movement and play action. And it really highlighted his strengths. And, you know, as I said, one of his great strengths was going there and winning over the program and the players in the program before they even went to training camp. To my recollection, I think he became captain sometime before the season started.
The overarching premise of the HBO classic series, The Wire, is that we're all connected. How's this for a coincidence? Aaron Henry was going into his senior season at Wisconsin in the summer of 2011. He would help coach Brett Bielema recruit Wilson to the Badgers. 6 years later, Henry would join Dave Doran's staff as a defensive assistant at NC State. Henry worked with the Wolfpack for 3 seasons. He's now on Bielema's staff at Illinois. In the summer of 2011, Henry would get a head start on his coaching career, and he would learn the importance of recruiting. On June 27th, Russell Wilson made his commitment to Wisconsin official.
Russell Wilson's joining us in studio. He's going to go to Wisconsin. Why the Badgers? I know that Auburn was in the mix as well. Maybe the offense, coaching staff, the fact that you don't really have to get a whole new set of ties because they're both red.
You know, a lot of schools contacted me. I talked to a lot of different places and a lot of great schools, a lot of big-time, prestigious schools where, you know, it's hard to say no. You know, and so it's the type of thing where Wisconsin's one of those, though. You know, they're a prestigious big-time football team. And, you know, I think more than anything, though, I think it was the coaching staff and also the players that they have there right now that have – you know, great experience and great leadership, and also the atmosphere. You know, the atmosphere of Wisconsin is absolutely beautiful up there. It's big-time football, 90,000-plus fans. You're playing in some of the best and biggest stadiums there are. You know,
Camp Randall's going to be shaking.
Yeah, it's going to be shaking. I'm excited about it. And also, I'm wearing red and white, so, you know, it's a good thing. I like those because I think I look good in those colors.
on Russell's official visit, it was me and Nick Toon.
Right.
Nick Toon was our wide receiver. So anytime they wanted a guy, they put me with him. 11 guys had signed to the University of Wisconsin prior to that. And Russell was my 12th guy. Him and Nick hit it off. We kind of shared duty with him in terms of his official visit. I met Mom, met his brother. Mom's a beautiful, awesome lady. Brother was incredible. But this dude, he had a very, it's a personality you kind of gravitate to. You can tell he was eager. And I think it was out of us in Auburn, because Auburn had just lost Cam Newton. They had just won a national championship. And so it was out of us in Auburn, and we had just lost our quarterback, Scott Tolzien, at Wisconsin. I think between me, Coach, and Nick Toon, we all did a great job. And offensive coordinator Paul Chris, we all did a great job on selling Russell the identity of our program and what we're trying to get done. And Coach B is a genuine dude, and he ended up finally deciding to come with us after that weekend. But
be honest, though, did you know about him at all while he was still playing at NC State?
So no, I didn't know. I mean, I had heard about him. I heard he was a really good quarterback. But prior to him getting on campus for his visit, I didn't know about him. I can actually remember Coach bring me up to his office and was like, "There's a quarterback that we're trying to get. We're going to host him. We're going to have him up here for official, and I would like for you to be his host." I'm like, "Yeah, Coach, whatever." You know, and I had did some recon on him, but I'm outside of that day. No, I hadn't been. I hadn't done a lot of research or got a lot of information about who Russell Wilson was. You know, ACC, Big Ten. You know, I wasn't really following ACC football outside of probably Florida State, growing up in South Florida, you know.
Sure.
So when I finally met him, I realized what kind of dude he was. I'm like, this cat's the real deal.
One of the most amazing things that Russell Wilson did at Wisconsin actually happened before their season even started. He commits on June 27th. Camp opens on August 4th. And within weeks, he's voted captain by his teammates at Wisconsin. Now, Russell Wilson's an impressive guy, but what did he do to impress his new Wisconsin teammates? I had to ask Aaron Henry for the story.
Funny story about that, man. So that year, our team captains were me, Pat Buttram, Russell Wilson, and Brady Ewing. I mean, it was literally, Russell was on campus maybe a month or two before he was voted a team captain. Like, he literally has that kind of aura, man. Like, he was very, very mature for his age, dude. It's like the dude was already a 30-year-old adult when we were 18, 19, 20 years old. You know, like the way he carried himself, you know, when he got on campus, he started setting up these 7-on-7 deals with some of our wideouts, setting up days that they were going to throw. When guys realized, okay, like this dude can spin the football, you know, like they're catching balls from him. Like this cat can really spin the football and like we can be an elite group. Guys gravitated to him. He knew how to command the room. He knew how to command the offense. And for some dudes, you just know, right? Like, you just know they have those kind of personalities. They're genuine people. Like, okay, this cat's a leader. It didn't take long to put Russell Wilson in a room with our whole team to realize, okay, this cat's different. It was like he had came in a class with us. That's what kind of personality he had. Like, the 1 year that we were there, or that he was there with us, it felt like Russ had been with us for 4 years.
With Wilson in the fold, Wisconsin starts the 2011 season with a 6-0 record. In the first game with the Badgers, Wilson was nearly flawless. He completed 10 of 13 passes for 255 yards with two touchdowns, and he ran for a 46-yard touchdown in a 51-17 win over UNLV. Whatever part of the country didn't know about Russell Wilson at NC State, they quickly figured it out by the time he got to Wisconsin. The Badgers were 6-0, ranked number 6 in the country, and their first loss actually came to Kirk Cousins in Michigan State. Cousins hit a 44-yard Hail Mary to beat the Badgers on the last play of the game. The very next week, Ohio State used a 40-yard touchdown in the last minute to take a late lead and then avoided a Hail Mary attempt by Wilson. The Badgers had the last laugh, though. They got their revenge on the Spartans in the Big Ten title game, and they were off to the Rose Bowl. Wilson ended up 9th in the Heisman Trophy voting after throwing for 33 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions. But it was his teammate, running back Monty Ball, who was 4th in the Heisman voting after he ran for more than 1,900 yards. The Badgers would meet number 5 Oregon in Pasadena. Wilson threw for almost 300 yards and accounted for 3 touchdowns. But he couldn't complete a late comeback, and the game ended with Wilson trying to spike the ball to stop the clock. Oregon wins 45-38. Kyle Wilson was in the stands in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl that day. He still remembers how his old friend reacted to what was a heartbreaking loss.
And I went to a couple of games when he was at Wisconsin. And, you know, we stayed pretty close for about 3 or 4 years after he left NC State. But, yeah, I was out at the Rose Bowl. And obviously the Rose Bowl turned out the way it did. The infamous, you know, spike with no time left. And it was heartbreaking for all of us in the stands. And then I think all, you know, Russell Wilson fans and certainly Wisconsin fans. But I'll never forget, man, I went to his hotel room after and I was like, I got to say goodbye. And, you know, he's got to be super devastated. You know, he had an opportunity to win the Rose Bowl and yada, 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 right? I kid you not, Joe. I walk in there to give him a hug and I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. He's like, you know what? It's all right, dude. He's like, Drew Brees never won the Rose Bowl and he won the Super Bowl. And not but... what, 2 years later, 3 years later, Russ wins the Super Bowl. So those things are kind of crazy, and that kind of gives you an insight of how his mind works from a mental performance standpoint. He had that ability to kind of look forward and see his future, per se, or understand that this is just a bump in the road and there's a lot more challenges ahead and there's a lot more cool things to happen up ahead.
Wisconsin was pretty good before Russell Wilson got there. They had won a share of the Big Ten in 2010, but they had a truly special season in 2011. Aaron Henry doesn't know Tom O'Brien. He ended up working for Tom O'Brien's successor in Dave Doran, but he'd like to thank Tom O'Brien for a gift from his senior season at Wisconsin.
One thing I will say is I want to personally thank Tom O'Brien. I want to personally thank him for allowing Russell to transfer. I owe him a paycheck or something, man. That dude, he was stellar for us, man.
That's fair. You probably have a Rose Bowl ring or a Big Ten championship ring somewhere.
Yes, sir. I sure do.
Meanwhile, NC State started the 2011 season with a 2-2 record. A 44-14 loss to Cincinnati on a Thursday night turned into an infomercial for Russell Wilson and one long, what the heck was he thinking for Tom O'Brien. I covered NC State that season for the NNO. I can count on one hand, heck, maybe even one digit, how many times O'Brien actually mentioned Wilson's name that year. That wasn't by accident. But there also wasn't a malicious intent to it, Mike Glennon said. It was simply O'Brien's way of moving on.
I don't think I really got the sense of, you know, all the what people probably were saying. And maybe the coaches did a good job of it, but we were, it honestly wasn't really talked about. I remember, like, Russell, I think his first game went off up there, Wisconsin was like, 18 for 20 or something like that. And I remember Coach Bible like, did you guys see Russ? Like, it was more in a sense of like, look what he's doing. Like, good for him. It wasn't like, oh, we wish we had him.
Yeah.
Like,
nobody was bitter.
It seemed like the ship had sailed.
With your team.
No. It just wasn't even brought up. Like, within the Murphy Center, Russell's name just, it was just like, almost like, I guess now that I'm in the NFL and you see guys go somewhere else, it's just like, sure. Oh, okay. Like, move on. Like, life goes on.
One thing Tom O'Brien never did during the 2011 season and wouldn't do now is spell out the simple math of his decision. He had 2 years of Mike Glennon compared to just one for Russell Wilson. But since there was more to the decision, O'Brien was never going to simplify it that way, although I would argue he should have. I bounced this theory off of former NC State assistant Mike Archer, who was O'Brien's defensive coordinator.
Do you ever think... and you know Tom pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He never explained the decision.
No, he never explained it to me. And I don't think
But do you think that among the things he should have done, shouldn't he have just come out and said, I have Mike Glennon for 2 years. I only have Russell Wilson for 1 year. This is why we're going with Mike Glennon. Knowing that Tom doesn't care about PR, and I get
right.
all that.
Right. I don't disagree with you there. But again, I wasn't in those meetings, so I don't know what was said to Mike and to Russell. But I get where you're coming from. And having sat
but
in that
chair. I was saying, somebody who was a head coach.
Yes, having sat in that chair, you got to make tough decisions. He made the decision that he thought was best for his whole football program because he thought that he knew he could have Mike for 2 years. Mike was a very talented quarterback. Mike won a lot of football games for us that year, the next 2 years. Not to say that Russell would not have, because Russell won a lot of games too. But I think he had to make a decision, whether you like it or not, that was best for the program and best for what he thought And I respect that, you know, whether I agree with it or not, okay, whether any of us agree with it or not on the staff. And I think there were coaches on the staff that didn't agree with it, but we're not the head coach. And you know, and I get that, you know, you got to make tough decisions, and he did. And, you know, you got to move on.
After a shaky 4-4 start, NC State found its footing under Mike Glennon in 2011. The Wolfpack won four of its final five games, starting with a 13-0 shutout of UNC on November 5th. That was the infamous flagship game, which Joe Ovias is still looking for his game ball for.
Everett Weathers joining us on the Allen Kelly and Company Train Hotline. You've been vocal about this one right from the jump on Saturday in the postgame. You talked about being the big dog in the state. That's contrasted to your previous boss, Butch Davis.
Well, I think when you have as many schools in this state as we have, and the recruiting base gets watered down a little bit, mm-hmm. I think the kids in this state need to know, you know, the flagship school in this state. I just believe this is the state. A guy told me a long time ago, you want to go to a school that has the in front of it.
Do you believe in bulletin board material? Because you are providing some.
No, I'm not.
Glennon threw for three touchdowns, and NC State dumped number 7 Clemson the next week, 37-13 at Carter-Finley Stadium. It was the kind of big win O'Brien's teams were known for. It's also actually the last time NC State beat Clemson. Then came the Maryland trap. The Terps led 41-14 before Glennon led the biggest comeback in school history. I remember Glennon was actually booed during the first half of that game because that was an awful Maryland team. There was no Ralph Regan around. There was no Danny O'Brien. There was no Torrey Smith. This was a terrible 2-9 Randy Edsall-led disaster. But it doesn't matter when it comes to Maryland and NC State, as the first three quarters of that game proved.
Our immaturity showed early in that we tried too hard. We played too tight, and we tried to avoid that all week.
It's kind of surreal that it was like, is this really happening?
Suddenly, Mike Glennon starts throwing touchdowns, and the defense creates quick turnovers. What transpires is the largest comeback in NC State school history. Glennon throws 5 touchdown passes. The Pack scores 42 straight points and wins 56-41. And they're bowl eligible.
When this football team was 2-3, there wasn't a lot of people believed that we could win 5 out of the next 7 games.
Jason Jennings, WRL Sports, Raleigh.
And he did what so many other NC State NFL quarterbacks couldn't do. He beat Maryland in a regular season finale. Glennon threw for 3 more touchdowns in a Belk Bowl win over Louisville to close out the season to cap an 8-5 record. Glennon finished that year with 31 touchdown passes, 3 more than Wilson had in 2010. Glennon had acquitted himself, but NC State and O'Brien were never going to win the PR war that season with the success that Wilson had at Wisconsin. That was something safety Brandon Bishop understood and, quite frankly, didn't care about.
That year starts slow. Russ blows up at Wisconsin. Did you ever think Tom screwed up?
No. The only time...
But you know everyone else thought that.
Of course, Wisconsin goes on to play in the Rose Bowl that year.
Right.
Their stage is a little bit bigger than ours. So it was easy to understand what the national conversation was becoming. We had a decent year, but lost some games we shouldn't have. The only time there's any second guessing is when you'd see highlights of Russ picking up the 3rd and 12 with his feet. And we knew Mike wasn't doing that. But we never thought Coach made a mistake. Mike was our guy. He was a damn good quarterback. And we had watched him for 3 years. We knew he was capable. And he was our guy.
All right, Gilio, I wanted to circle back to something. There was a conversation between Russell Wilson and former athletics director Debbie Yao at some point after Tom O'Brien told Russell Wilson that he wasn't coming back. I have this right?
Like, not only are you not going to let me be the starter, but you're not going to let me come back? Because that's what it came down to. Russ was like, fine, I've beaten out Mike every year before. I'll come back this time. I'll beat him out. And Tom O'Brien was like, no, you won't. You won't even have a scholarship. You can't come back. And then that's when Russell Wilson went to Debbie Yao and said, wait a second. Are you going to let him do this? Like, I don't have a scholarship. I don't have a way back. As I understand it, this would have been Debbie's first year. And remember where they were in the Director's Cup, like 89th. And it sounds somewhat trivial, the Director's Cup, but it really was something that Debbie cared about. And at that point, she just felt like all of those other non-revenue sports and everything else that was going on at NC State at the time needed more of her attention than that. And it, you know, if you want to be a little bit honest about it, when Debbie doesn't help Tom or doesn't interfere with that decision, it then all falls on Tom. Because in 2 years, she's going to fire Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine the conversation probably included, I let you have your way with this, and it didn't work out.
Well, to be fair, we already covered that 2011 Maryland game where Mike Glennon goes off in the second half. It has to be said that Debbie Yao was ready to get rid of Tom O'Brien after that game.
Yes. Tom O'Brien subsequently told me after he was fired, when they lost the game in 2010, that was the year at Maryland. Debbie left Maryland. She didn't exactly leave Maryland on the greatest of circumstances. She was actually at that game at Byrd Stadium. Tom said that day he knew no matter what would happen from that day forward, he was going to get fired. And it was just a matter of her trying to find an excuse to fire him after that game, after that loss. I do believe Debbie when she says she did not appreciate the way that he recruited and felt like NC State needed to recruit in a different type of way.
And I think it's important to bring up Debbie Yao into this equation because if you're just kind of looking back on it, you go, okay, Tom O'Brien whiffed on the Russell Wilson thing and then he got canned, as Peter King said. You know,
sure.
He's the one who got. I'm like, yeah, well, there was some other politics in play, and I think that context is important. I also think it's important to circle back on whether or not Tom O'Brien was right. There's an irony, as we've covered already in this episode of the podcast, but it's also fair to point out that Tom O'Brien was wrong. Maybe not in terms of the actual decision in the big picture, but certainly in the way that he handled it.
Yeah, I ultimately think Tom O'Brien was right, and then history has proven that once Russell Wilson committed, his football career took off. So I don't think you could take that away from Tom O'Brien. How he went about to proving that point to Russell Wilson, I think could have changed. At the very least, Russell had done enough, not only as a player, but as a person, to have earned an in-person conversation. That should have been a face-to-face conversation. It could have taken place after the bowl win. It could have taken place before Russell went to spring training. He could have gone to a Asheville Torres game and had that conversation in person with him. At the very least.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's one of your players. You have to support him one way or the other. Maybe you don't think he's got an NFL future because that's what, quote unquote, the NFL people tell him. But you still have to have a certain bedside manner in handling it.
Yeah, and Tom was never going to explain everything. He was not he's not a Bond villain. He's never been interested in explaining, even now, his decisions. But I think he owed Russell a better explanation than the one that he gave him.
It's also fair, too, that while a lot of Mike Glennon's teammates liked him, it wasn't exactly like this easy peasy process throughout. I mean, you start the season off with a loss and Russell Wilson's off doing his thing at Wisconsin. You know there had to be some sentiment of, man, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I think Wayne Crawford, after that Cincinnati loss, he remembered that Tom O'Brien wasn't thrilled with the team because it was an embarrassing game. It was an embarrassing performance. But Wayne knew there was something missing.
And I just vehemently remember after losing games in the early part of the season, and we're getting, you know, for lack of a better term, reamed because we lack leadership. Everybody in the room was like, damn, we just like kind of let our leader walk out the door. And oh, by the way, he's doing really well, you know, in behind these corn-fed boys up in Madison, Wisconsin.
The other interesting tidbit here is as much as we can kind of point the finger at Tom O'Brien, Russell Wilson continued to be, I guess, the bigger person. Remember, he came back in 2012 for an alumni day, part of like the whole pro thing leading up into the draft. And I mean, heck, we have the news report. They're talking all nice and stuff like that.
Russell Wilson is back at NC State 1 year after Tom O'Brien told him not to return for his senior season. This afternoon, both men share a conversation on the state practice field.
Saying hello again, haven't seen him in a while, obviously. We've shared a few phone calls every once in a while, you know, during, you know,
right before the Rose Bowl. You know, Russell's an alumni. It's alumni weekend, and we're glad that he was able to make it back.
I've got my foundation from North Carolina State University, so, you know, I want to have the access to be able to come back.
Jason Jennings, WRAL Sports, Raleigh.
While it didn't end on the best of terms, there at least still is some level of respect, right down to the fact that Tom O'Brien, and I guess this is the most we'll ever get out of Tom, which was pre-Russell Wilson Super Bowl appearance, the first Super Bowl, right? Where Tom O'Brien was getting so many questions about, so what happened at NC State? That in 2014, Virginia, where he was as an assistant at that time, held a press availability for Tom O'Brien to answer all the questions for all the feature writers. And I guess this is the closest we're going to get to Tom O'Brien admitting that he could have done some things differently.
You know, we ended up redshirting him. If we thought that he was going to be that kind of quarterback with our quarterback situation, we probably would have played him our first year there, because we certainly could have used somebody of his ability. You know, we parted on great terms. Russell went his way. We had to make a decision what's best for NC State. We made that decision and went forward. And actually, the best news is it worked out for both kids. You know, both had the opportunity. In fact, they both got to compete against each other and play this year on the field side. You know, it's a great opportunity for Russell. It was a great opportunity for Michael. You know, we were lucky to have those kids for the 4 years that we had them playing. 5 years, whatever it stayed, and, you know, people ought to be happy about that.
And I guess that gets back to another mind bender. What if Russell Wilson was allowed to play his freshman year? He didn't redshirt. How do things go then?
It pushes back the timetable, right? And then Mike plays the 2 years, and there's no controversy. So I think that's why he has said that subsequently. It tidies it up a little bit.
As we close the second to last chapter of this podcast, I do feel it's important to go back to the title of the podcast, Never Failed. It's because Tom O'Brien used that phrase that Russell Wilson has never failed at anything in his life. And we focused on the football aspect of it. He clearly did not fail in his pursuits of football. He is a Super Bowl champion, an MVP. But what about baseball? It feels like it's become an afterthought. I would argue, from a more sentimental, sappy point of view, that Russell Wilson did not fail with his baseball pursuits either. Sure, he never became a Major League Baseball player. However, he did fulfill one particular aspect of his baseball dream by becoming a New York Yankee, albeit in a roundabout way. When he was with the Colorado Rockies, he was eventually acquired by the Texas Rangers in a AAA portion of the Rule 5 draft. I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of the Rule 5 draft, but it's one of these classic publicity stunts by a Major League Baseball team that will bring in a high-profile name that might have had baseball dreams in the past, and they get to a point in their careers where they can be brought in as a motivational speaker or maybe even to generate headlines. Eventually, he was traded to the New York Yankees in 2018 and was assigned to their AA affiliate. He got to have a press conference. He got to wear Yankees gear. He even pinch hit for future Major League Baseball star Aaron Judge.
Russell, what was it like to put on the Yankee jersey for the first time? What do you think your dad would have thought about that?
Well, it's definitely one of the coolest things I've ever done. You know, ever since I was a young kid, I always dreamed to be a Yankee. I always watched him. My favorite player was Derek Jeter, you know, growing up and watching him and his professionalism, how he played the game and the competitiveness he played with, the passion, the love, the joy that he played with every day, watching some of the greatest players in the world. I tried to get number three, but I think somebody had it already. So it's been pretty cool. So I'm wearing number 73. Number 7 was my baseball number in high school, and number 3, obviously, my football number and everything else. So it's pretty cool to put on the jersey for the first time.
Was that too sappy for you?
No. And good for Russ. You can hear it in his voice just in that press conference, what that day meant to him. Even if it wasn't truly making it to the majors, that was a moment he had lived for his whole life.
Now, look, if you want to be literal and hold it against Russell Wilson that he did not fulfill the dream of being the next Bo Jackson, well, who is? That's the problem. There's only one Bo Jackson. Growing up in that era, Bo Jackson was like a modern-day Paul Bunyan. He had these tall tales associated with him. And ESPN did a 30 for 30 documentary trying to separate fact from fiction. It's pretty eye-opening to find out how much of that stuff turned out to be true. If you watch it, you'll see Bomani Jones of ESPN in the documentary. Of all the national guys, Bomani Jones has one of the more unique perspectives on Russell Wilson. Bomani was doing local sports talk radio here in the Triangle with us at the same time that Russell Wilson was coming up at NC State. He eventually moved on to satellite radio and then ESPN. In fact, he was here in the building the same day that Russell Wilson was announcing he was going to Wisconsin. How's that for a small world? Now, Bomani would be quick to point out it's unfair to compare anybody to Bo Jackson, but he is quick to note that with two sport athletes, things have to break your way.
I think that you're not going to get another Bo Jackson because they're not going to put enough time between the two of them in the first place, right? Like, that's what we're going to get. The other thing I think we always have to remember also, I don't know if we get Bo Jackson in the first place if Hugh Culverhouse doesn't handle him so poorly and ruin, you know, and make Bo Jackson say, "I will never play for you." And then go play baseball because he said he would never play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I think that becomes part of it. And it's really just too much wear and tear on your body. Like the injury that Bo Jackson ultimately suffered, obviously, was not one of wear and tear. But there were always wear and tear injuries with him. Deion Sanders is not a person who's in great physical condition right now. And that's a dude that wasn't out there tackling in the first place. It was just all the travel and trying to do all these things at one time and the seasons overlapping and everything else. I don't think it's going to wind up being possible. The other part is Deion and Bo Jackson were much better baseball players than Russell Wilson was. And that's not really an insult to Russell Wilson. They were surefire major league players. He was a maybe major league player.
Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders were better athletes than Russell Wilson.
Yeah, right. And again, in the Bo Jackson comparison, go look at pictures of Bo Jackson from when he was in high school, keeping in mind that they were poor. Right? How did you get that big if y'all so damn poor? You know what I'm saying? Like your body just converted the few morsels of food that you got into pure muscle. And I'm not being sarcastic when I say that. That is apparently what was going on with Bo Jackson. They made one of those, right? And it was not one of those things that you were going to get done by sheer determination. And Russell has gotten a lot done via sheer determination.
Economics factor into this as well. You can get a big payday in baseball, but you got to grind to get to that payday. If you're a really good quarterback in the NFL, oh, there's money waiting for you. Of course, what happens when you start throwing big money around? You don't want to risk that investment. So you've seen a discouragement in two-sport athletes from the baseball side and the football side. John Manuel is a scout for the Minnesota Twins. Before that, he was the co-editor-in-chief for Baseball America. His job was to be an expert on college baseball while he was at Baseball America and put out prospect draft lists. If you look at some of the old ones, you'd see some pretty recognizable NFL names on that list, but then they started to go away.
You know, I was at Baseball America a long time. I've worked there 21 years overall, 12 years as editor-in-chief. And the two sport guys, the first year that we put our draft information online, the number five prospect in the state of Oregon, I think, was Troy Polamalu. We had a Troy Polamalu baseball scouting report in 1999. I mean, there were all these two sport guys. Michael Vick was drafted by the Rockies out of high school. And toward the end of my time at BA, they really dried up. And Kyler Murray is a great example of a guy who was clearly a guy in high school. Went to the Under Armour game, one of the two big baseball summer all-star games for high school juniors, rising seniors. I mean, you don't get invited to that unless you're a potential first or second round pick. And Kyler Murray went ninth overall eventually, but doesn't even play baseball. I work in the Twins organization with Troy Hawkins, who was the godfather of Patrick Mahomes. He pitched in the big leagues and came up in the minor leagues in the Twins organization with Mahomes' dad. But the whole Twins organization, I mean, they're all supposed to be, I think it's in our contracts, we're supposed to be Vikings fans, but I think there's an exception made for Mahomes. But you have to pick one these days. And the baseball rules have even changed. You used to be able to spread the bonus out over 5 years for two sport players, whether it was Tyrell Godwin or who went to North Carolina or Joe Mauer at the top of the draft for the Twins in 2001 or Samardzija, all these guys. But those rules changed in baseball's draft after the 2011 draft. So Russell Wilson, from a timing standpoint, from a way amateur sports have changed with specialization, I think he really was at the very tail end of this kind of two-sport, I don't know if I would say it was a boomlet, but a two-sport era. And we're definitely in a different era now where you have to pick a sport when you're in high school I think all sports, I think we're all lesser for it as fans, but definitely seems like it makes things easier for these pro teams and these colleges. They don't have to wrestle or fight over Russell Wilson for several years like they used to have to do.
Russell Wilson was a prospect that John Manuel described as tantalizing. Essentially, if you caught him on a good day, you could see why baseball scouts were intrigued. And this actually led to one of the rare moments in which John Manuel showed up to a college baseball game and was straight up lied to because of Russell Wilson.
And I could not believe, in scouting parlance, the heat that was at this game. The heat at that game was out of the norm for a Sunday because the best pitchers aren't throwing on Sunday. They're throwing on Friday. And there were at least five scouting directors at this game, the guys who make the call in the first round. And Miami that year had Yasmani Grandal, who's had a long big league career as a catcher. So I waited between innings and sidled up to Bill Schmidt, scouting director for the Colorado Rockies, who I had a pretty good relationship with and was recently made the interim general manager of the Rockies. He's the longest tenured scouting director in baseball. So he was a good guy to ask. I said, Bill, what's going on? Why are all these people here? And just without a pause, he just said, oh, Grandal. I sidled on up to Damon Oppenheimer, scouting director for the Yankees since 2005. He's still their scouting director. Drafted Aaron Judge 3 years after this. He knows college hitters. I said, Damon, what's going on? Why are all these dudes here? He went, oh, Grandal. And within the next week or two, I wrote my state list for North Carolina and Baseball America, top 200 draft prospects at that time. Russell Wilson, nowhere to be found in the top 200. I asked point blank to Jay Matthews, the Rockies area guy, and he says, nah, nobody's going to draft Russell this year. He's going to keep playing quarterback. I don't think anybody's going to waste a pick on him. And on draft day, they take Russell Wilson in the fourth round. And when that happened, I'm telling you, just sitting in the BA office listening to that draft, my heart sank because top five round picks we're not supposed to miss. And I missed. And as soon as that pick happened, Jay Matthews texted me like 5 minutes later and said, hey, man, I'm sorry, but I could not let you know how interested we were in Russell Wilson. All these guys, basically, Bill Schmidt has told me since then, that they all pretty much got together that day and said, we're not letting anybody know we're here for Russell Wilson. And all the scouts there talked to each other and said, like, okay, this is on the down low. Don't tell anybody if they show up. And I showed up and Bill was like, damn. Nobody tell Manuel, and he had that ability, and I didn't see it. So, I'm not sure why the Twins hired me as a scout because I didn't see that, but I'm not working amateurs either, Joe, so maybe there's a reason for that too.
5 episodes into this podcast, it does seem like everybody's got a story about Russell Wilson. He's kind of become a tall tale himself, which explains why the story gets twisted when it gets told in a broadcast, on sports talk radio, in a feature article. You just can't nail it down in a paragraph. In the final episode of Never Failed, we'll get to the bottom as to why the story is told the way that it's told, and we'll also ask the ultimate question. Did Tom O'Brien do Russell Wilson wrong?